Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Composer Meredith Monk has been exploring the voice as an instrument since the 60s. She's won just about every award we have for composers these days, including a MacArthur Fellowship, the so-called Genius Award. Now she's been named Musical America's Composer of the Year for 2012. Plus, other musicians really like her. In fact, they've been lining up to take part in a new project that offers remixes and reinterpretations of some of Meredith Monk's works. In the background, you're hearing Björk with the Brodsky String Quartet doing a version of Monk's early piece Gotham Lullaby. And there's plenty more where that came from. Meredith Monk is here to share some of the album called Monk Mix. Welcome back, Meredith.
Thank you, John.
So Björk was actually an appropriate person to start with because... This really was the beginnings of the project, wasn't it?
Well, I heard her version of Gotham Lullaby. Nobody had ever covered a piece of mine before. And I heard it by chance because I was teaching at Connecticut College. Mm-hmm. And one of my students said, Björk is covering Gotham Lullaby. It's on an MP3. So I was like, wow, that's really interesting. So then I heard it and I realized that she had really found her own way. You know, it usually doesn't work when people try to sing a piece just like I do.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get into
Well, for a couple of reasons.
Well, you have to really get into the world of that piece.
Right.
And I felt that she had found her own way, but she really kept the feeling of Gotham Lullaby.
So without trying to imitate all of the so-called extended vocal techniques that you've developed over the years, it's clearly Björk.
That's right.
But it's also clearly Gotham Lullaby. Now, she also did this at a Zankel Hall event.
Yes.
And it was, one of these things where a lot of people came together to celebrate you and your music. And one of the people there was DJ Spooky.
Yes.
And he's the one who sort of masterminded this thing, didn't he?
Yeah, I think it was just around that time. Maybe he got the idea from that marathon. But he said, I've got all my friends that would love to remix your music. And I was a little bit skeptical. So I was like, I don't know. And then I was a little like, I don't know. And then I was like, I don't know. And then I was like, okay. So it went on for a while.
How much back and forth did he have to do to get you to agree to this?
It took a while.
Really?
I mean, we've been talking about this since 2005. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yes, that is a while.
Yeah.
Let me give you an idea of what DJ Spooky and the rest of the gang have done on this record called Monk Mix. First, here a couple of, these are just a couple of short excerpts from Meredith Monk's Book of Days. So there are just a couple of short excerpts from Meredith Monk's original recording of Book of Days. Now here's what DJ Spooky came up with on the record called Monk Mix. That is DJ Spooky's remix of Dawn, an excerpt from Meredith Monk's Book of Days. And So Meredith, you referred once to the recording of Book of Days as a film for the ears. Mm-hmm. How did it feel to hear that film for the ears turned into a pop song?
Now it's a film for the body because you just dance, start dancing.
And in the interest of full disclosure, Meredith was indeed kind of dancing
bopping
a little
around
bit
there
here in the studio during. So, I mean, he's taken the same clips that we just played, mm-hmm. but it's not just setting them to a beat. I mean, he's sort of.
He actually changed the accents are different, and then he has a different kind of harmonies underneath it,
mm-hmm.
plus the beat.
Now, this is a sort of interesting extension of a kind of performance practice that has grown up around your music over the course of your career. I mean, at the beginning, you wrote for your voice.
Right.
Then there was the Meredith Monk Vocal Ensemble,
exactly.
Handpicked group.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, you know, you started writing for other people. I think it was Musica Sacra recorded some of your work.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have Björk
other
singing.
Other people
yeah.
making something.
So, I mean, did you sort of at some point try to push that development along, or did that take you by surprise?
I think it's been a big surprise. And actually, I always come back to working with my own ensemble. That's my home. That's my home base. You know, it's if I reach out a little bit, it's a little bit like trying to extend out to and try to be generous with the music, because I think the music is very joyful to perform. Then I always feel like I need to go right back home again to my ensemble and actually even to sometimes I work on solo pieces
mm-hmm.
again.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the vocal, you know, we talk about the voice as instrument, and just as in the 20th century, violinists and cellists and guitarists were all working and extending the boundaries mm-hmm. of their instruments, you've done that with the voice as well. But now you're also writing instrumental pieces.
Yeah.
And including a new work for the San Francisco Symphony.
Yeah,
what's that?
Well, it's called Realm Variations, and Michael Tilson Thomas is reviving the American Maverick series here in New York, but also in San Francisco. So he called me up and he said, you know, I would really like you to, we have this wonderful piccolo player in the orchestra, and I'd really like you to make a piece for her, Catherine Payne. And I said, Michael, I don't even know anything about the piccolo. And I have to admit, it's not my favorite instrument. So wait a minute here. And so then I decided, well, she really wanted, I think it might have come from Kathy that she really wanted to work on this music. So I started thinking about a very treble realm of sound. So I have up there a violin as well, playing very mm-hmm. high. The two of them are playing a lot of duets. And then two sopranos, Allison Sniffen and Randall Wong.
From
my ensemble. Mm-hmm. Then in the mid-range.
And yes, that second name, folks, was a male name.
Yes,
Randall
he's
is
an
a male soprano.
He's an amazing soprano.
Yeah.
And then the mid-range, I have French horn and viola, and then Katie Geisinger and I am singing.
Okay.
And then on the bottom range, I've got bassoon and contrabass clarinet, and then two basses singing. And then harp pulls those realms together. You know, it really becomes a, you know, the fabric of the piece, although I use the harp very low, which I think is so beautiful, the low range, which a lot of people don't work
so,
with.
So even here, writing for the San Francisco Symphony, your own, the members of your ensemble, mm-hmm. your home base, as mm-hmm. you put it, are kind of a crucial part of the sound.
Definitely.
So that that piece, Realm Variations, that gets its world premiere in San Francisco, Michael Tilson Thomas conducting on March 18th, and then New York premiere here in New York at Carnegie's Zankel Hall on March 30th. And again, the idea of a performance practice developing around your music over the years, it's gotten to the point now where on this new record, Caetano Veloso does a version of one of your songs.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a fan of his?
Oh, I have been a fan of his since his first album that I ever heard, which was a Nonesuch recording in 1986. I think it was just called Caetano Veloso. It's a beautiful album with just him singing. And Bob Hurwitz from Nonesuch said, you have to hear this singer. And, you know, it's very different than the way that I sing. You know, it's much more a pop, you know, mm-hmm. Brazilian pop singer. But I don't know what it is about his singing. I just fell madly in love with his voice and the way that he sings and that kind of relaxed way that he sings.
Yeah.
So I've been a complete fan. I was, you know, just almost pinching myself that he would consider singing one of my pieces. But then he told me that he's been a fan of mine over the years and that my music has helped him keep going,
nice.
You know, and you know, so just being in contact with him has been a miracle.
Are you a fan of Brazilian music in general?
Definitely. Yeah. Especially Caetano, but definitely Brazilian music. I love it.
Well, this is the great Brazilian singer and songwriter Caetano Veloso doing Meredith Monk's last song.
Let's dance, let's dance.
That is Caetano Veloso. That's another side of Caetano Veloso. Yeah. Doing Meredith Monk's last song from the 2-CD set called Monk Mix, which features interpretations and remixes from Lee Rinaldo of Sonic Youth, the Bang on a Can All-Stars, Miho Hattori, Scanner, High Priest from Antipop Consortium, Gabriel Prokofiev, Sergei's grandson, lots of other people. Did you have any, did you make any calls to any of these folks?
Paul was the person that really started. Paul Miller, DJ Spooky, did the first calls, I think. And I think we were thinking originally it was going to be straight remixes. But little by little, it just seemed like that it was nice to open it up for people that either were covering the songs. And then there's a third category of people that have, it's not exactly a remix, but they take some of the recorded things, but they really recompose it, you could say, like Gabriel Prokofiev.
Right.
He really takes Boatman and then he alters it. So I wouldn't say exactly a remix, do you know what I mean? It's like almost a different composition.
Almost like a collage.
Like a collage. Yeah. So people really did different approaches.
Right. Uh-huh. But Caetano, that's a cover.
Caetano is a straight cover.
Right.
And so at a certain point, I think 2 years ago, I mean, this has really been going on. I took a look at this list because I didn't really do so much on this at all. Peter Ciccioli really was the producer of the album, and DJ Spooky was the executive producer, I guess you would say, the catalyst. And so I was looking at the list and I realized, I'm not sure that I know almost anybody on this list.
Well, that I was going to ask you whether you knew these folks.
So it just seemed nice to ask people that I had a connection to. So that's when Caetano was on. And I think we had always thought Björk's cut was going to be on because I always loved that cut of hers. And then I love the Lucas Ligeti is a beautiful cut. And Suzanne Dehim is a very beautiful
Iranian singer for many years based here in New York. If the tables were turned, whose music would you like to cover?
Oh, that's a hard question because I don't really sing other people's music that much.
I know.
I find it really challenging. Like one person that I loved singing his music, but it was very difficult. It was the late Donald Ashwander. So I did sing some of his songs.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very challenging.
For folks who don't, most folks don't know Donald Ashwander. He was one of those kind of neo-ragtime pianists. Here in New York.
Yes.
Passed away some 20 or 30 years ago, I guess.
1994.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, what about John Cage? Because you mentioned this American Maverick series that Michael Tilson Thomas and the San Francisco Symphony are doing, and you are taking part in the John Cage songbooks.
Well, see, this telephone call from Michael Tilson Thomas was like, oh, my gosh. You know, first it was like, would you write a piece for Piccolo? So I'm like, ay, ay, ay. And then the second was, will you sing John Cage songbooks with Jesse Norman? And at that time, Joan LaBarbera wasn't, he didn't mention her, but then later they hired her. And she's also a real expert, had his music. She's sung his music for years.
Right.
So,
but Jesse Norman is better known as an opera singer.
That's right. I think we're both a little out of our comfort zone. I haven't met Jesse yet, but I would imagine.
Wow.
Maybe she isn't, though, but I am.
So you've never done anything like this before?
Well, I did do his piece called Aria in 1986. Upstate and John came to my little house and I made him dinner and, you know, I did two performances of that. So, you know, I did have that experience. But it's very challenging because each of the pieces, in a way, you have to make your own piece. It's very intricate and very rigorous. You know, I think a lot of people think of John as you can do anything you want. Not at all. He has his directions are very, very specific. You have to really construct your interpretation, and each one takes a lot of time. So I'm singing five pieces, and one of them is just really literally just reading a piece that he wrote, and but the rhythms are very, very, very hard.
So it's a series of, it's not like there are trios with you and Jesse singing together with Joan LaBarbara.
Well, I think what they're going to do, at least is what Michael told me, and there's a director, Yuval Sharon, who's a young opera director in L.A., I think they're going to do like a collage where sometimes we could be singing three different pieces simultaneously.
Oh.
So basically, and it's a very John kind of way of thinking about things, each of us is having a track of songs, like of the five songs, but we're singing different songs at different times, and then sometimes you have to be still. You know, there are these actions in between, and so I think it's will always be a sort of chance operation thing, except that we have to stay on our own tracks and not be influenced or relate to the other singers.
Wow. Which is sort of goes against a lot of what singers are trained to do. So, well, if you're interested to hear how that all turns out, the performance of the John Cage songbooks with my guest Meredith Monk and the famed opera singer Jesse Norman, and one of John Cage's longest interpreter, one of his longstanding interpreters, Joan LaBarbara, takes place at Carnegie on March 27th as part of the American Mavericks Festival. Meredith Monk's with me on Soundcheck today, and we're talking about, among other things, Monk Mix, this album of remixes and covers. And did you have any kind of qualms about when people came to pieces like Dolman Music, you know, this classic work that you wrote in the mid-70s and started doing the slicing and dicing with, you know, what is considered to be a classic piece of yours?
Yeah. I mean, this is CD, I mean, it's really exciting to see what other people will do and kind of be open to that. I mean, I feel like, again, in the spirit of generosity, what will people do that might surprise me? You know, that's exciting. But, you know, it's also difficult because the forms are a certain way because they need to be. There's an urgency about making this form that has a real integrity, like emotionally and musically. So that becomes a little difficult for me. It's challenging to, you know, when it does get broken up.
So when Shodake, who's from Baltimore, mm-hmm. when he did his remix of mm-hmm. Dolman Music, mm-hmm. were you taken aback a little bit initially?
I think that it doesn't have that much to do with Dolman Music in a way. You know, and I think that some people went pretty far away from the music. So you know, you get these shadows of Dolman Music. You get these little sections or little, you know, what would I say? Little shards. You get little shards of Dolman Music, little echoes. But basically, he really has gone in a different direction.
Well, let's hear again just a little bit of the source material that Shodake used from Meredith's Dolman Music. Just a couple of little clips from Meredith Monk's mid-70s piece, Dolman Music. And now, here is Shodake's Dolman Music 1 remix. Dolman Music 1 remix by the beatboxer known as Shodake, based on Meredith Monk's Dolman music. And Meredith, he's a beatboxer. Mm-hmm. Is he kind of a kindred spirit? I mean, he's using the voice as an instrument.
Oh, I think he's really remarkable. Beatboxer, my goodness. I heard him on the radio. Someone sent me a CD because they said that he really liked my music a lot and was inspired. But when I heard what he did, I was like, how did you do that? I mean, how could I be an inspiration? I mean, it's just unbelievable. You know, he's really amazing.
Well, I think, you know, the reason people like Shodaka and, you know, a group of younger rock singers, Melody from Toon Yards and the group Chairlift, I think the reason they all say Meredith Monk, big inspiration, and Missy Mazzoli earlier today, is that, you know, your use of the voice, not tethered to text, was really kind of important, I mm-hmm. think, for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
How different did that feel when you started down that road? Did you know that you were sort of blazing a new trail?
You know, I think I was pretty lonely in that pursuit. You know, for me personally, I came from a family of singers, and I really wanted to find my own way. And I think that I always trusted nonverbal communication because I also came from a movement background. And so when I had the revelation about that my voice could be like an instrument, it really was a revelation. It was one of those aha moments that you sometimes have in life. I knew I had found it. I mean, I knew I'd found what I was looking for. And then it also felt like I was coming back to my family blood, like I was born to do it or something. I know it sounds crazy, but nobody was really working that way at that time. And I realized that language would also get in the way. I felt that the voice itself was such a powerful, emotional, and ancient kind of language. So I just started exploring, you know, that, and that was my path.
And your mom, whose job was to sing all words,
yes,
all the time.
Right.
And she sang commercials.
Yeah,
she sang
the DUZ Does Everything, Schaefer Beer, Blue Bonnet Margarine, Royal Pudding.
So singing those things live on the radio.
Yeah, yeah.
So what did she think when you were like, you know, I'm not going to do Does or Schaefer or any of that stuff?
Well, I think at the beginning, maybe she might have been a little wondering what was going on. But there, at a certain point, I actually used her and two of her studio cronies in a piece of mine called Juice at the Guggenheim Museum. And she said, I don't know how you pick those notes out of the air. You know, but they were really game and they were good sports. And so I think that was a way of getting her into it. And then she was very, you know, she really loved the music as the years went on.
My guest is Meredith Monk. The album's called Monk Mix, an album of remixes, reinterpretations. So are you convinced? Are you going to do a dance record of your own now?
What do you mean, John?
Well, you got all these dance mixes here that you're clearly enjoying as we're playing them in the studio. But actually, you know, just because it's a remix doesn't mean it's a dance piece. If we listen to something like Ryuichi Sakamoto, very ethereal.
Yeah,
I mean, he's
beautiful.
Really captured the sort of the essence.
I love what he did.
This is Ryuichi Sakamoto's remix of Meredith Monk's Astronaut Anthem. Meredith Monk's piece for the San Francisco Symphony, The Realm Variations, gets its New York premiere at Zankel Hall on March 30th. Meredith, always a pleasure to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure,
John. This is Soundcheck.
So
Ryuichi Sakamoto's remix of Meredith Monk's Astronaut Anthem, wrapping up Soundcheck for today. Tomorrow, a look back at the life and career of the late blues guitarist Hubert Sumlin, who was Howlin' Wolf's right-hand man for 20 years. And clarinetist Don Byron brings his gospel-inspired new project to our studio for a live performance. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. The program is produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer. We had help today from Gina Gildasis. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.